Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show the general manager and head coach of the Fargo Force of the United States Hockey League, Kerry Eads. Kerry, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
I guess first and foremost, Kerry, congratulations to you on winning a Clark Cup championship earlier this year with the Sioux Falls Stampede. And then, of course, you've left the Stampede since then, and you've become the head coach of the Force. What's it like to be back in North Dakota? Obviously, your former ties to the state as you were an assistant coach with UND for a number of years.
Yeah, it's great to be back. I mean, we had a fun three-year ride in Sioux Falls making the playoffs all 3 years, and then culminating this season with a great final season run to be the last team in the playoffs. And just as about 3 years ago when LA was the eighth and final seed in the Western Conference, we were eighth and final seed overall in our playoffs and ended up running the table and winning the championship. A very exciting night, and then had an opportunity to move up to Fargo. You know, people may or may not know I spent a lot of time as a player and 15 years as a coach at the University of North Dakota. So my family lives in the area, and a lot of friends and family. So it's a great franchise, and I look forward to trying to bring a first Clark Cup to Fargo.
Kerry, we obviously brought you on to discuss the upcoming NHL draft in a week's time or so, and the draft eligible prospects coming out of the United States Hockey League. And, you know, I was mentioning earlier in the show that each year there are more and more prospects coming into the NHL who get their start playing in the USHL. How would you evaluate, we'll talk to you about specific players coming up, but how would you evaluate sort of the overall talent pool that's draft eligible coming from the USHL this coming draft?
Well, it's another deep pool. You know, last year we set a league record with 35 USHL players taken in the draft, the NHL draft, including 5 in the first round and another 10 in the second. So, you know, 15 players in the top 2 rounds of the draft, I think, shows the level of caliber of player that we're developing in our league and how it's grown, not only developmentally, but respect-wise in the NHL. And that probably has a lot to do with the success of our alumni, you know, going through. Generally, they come through the USHL and the college and then into the pros, and a lot of them have had successful NHL careers, and especially recently. So we look for those numbers to increase here this year.
Kerry, one of the highest-ranked USHL prospects is Kyle Connor, and we talked to Craig Button last week about him, and he's really high on him. What are his strengths and weaknesses as a player, and what do you see maybe as a comparison? I know it's kind of tough to compare prospects to current guys in the NHL, but what do you like most about his game?
Yeah, you know, his ability to do and control plays at top speed. You know, he does have a change of gears. He can kind of stop and go on a dime, and, you know, I guess Wayne Gretzky was the best at that, and I'm not saying he's going to be Wayne Gretzky, but he does have a lot of similar attributes, you know, in his puck possession and the vision, but he's really got some top-end speed and very, very difficult to beat one-on-one. So, yeah, you know, I'm looking for him to go in the top half of the first round, as well as, you know, we do have some alumni from our league, Jack Eichel and Noah Hanifin, two names that I'm sure most Canadian fans know, you know, having played in the World Junior team. Eichel's on to BU and Hanifin at BC. They're two guys rated in top 3 picks, you know, so a lot of top-end talent being developed, and it's going to really be interesting to see where everybody goes.
Kerry, does Jack Eichel remind you of anybody?
Man, you know, that's kind of hard to put comparisons. You know, he's got a lot of pop to his game, no question about it. You know, fans saw that not only in the World Juniors, but it was also in the Men's World Tournament as well, and did very well at that level and was a real productive player for the U.S. team. So, you know, he's a guy that kind of seems to have no weaknesses. He's got some physicality to his game, obviously a great shot, and then really elite speed, again, with being able to control the puck and make plays at high speed. I think that's the name of the game right now. You take a look at Tampa Bay's success through the NHL playoffs, and and their run and how many speedy, skilled players they had was definitely, you know, really one of their strong attributes in winning the Eastern Conference.
When you look at, you know, Craig Button's ratings, you know, in the USHL, it's two guys carving out the top 10. We mentioned Kyle Connor earlier in the interview, Carey, and then Brock Boeser is the other one. What can you tell us about his game?
Yeah, a real power forward. You know, actually, a lot of these guys have similarities in that they're elite skaters. I think that's one thing that, you know, fans listening that have youngsters, you know, get your kids to skating lessons, get them working on it. You know, to be a top player this day, you really have to be an elite skater. And as you move up at different levels, that's the number one thing that eliminates a player. You know, so Brock Boeser is, again, one of those elite skaters. He's got some pop to his stride. He's a very similar player to Jack Eichel, actually. Maybe, you know, not maybe, but probably not quite as developed overall as Eichel right now. And that's why he's rated a little bit towards the end of the first round. But he played at Waterloo this year, had a great season, and now moving on to the University of North Dakota, so area fans will be able to follow his progress.
Mm-hmm. We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Carey Eads, the head coach and general manager of the Fargo Force of the United States Hockey League, discussing the draft-eligible prospects coming out of the USHL. And Carey, you just mentioned Brock Boeser, and his teammate on Waterloo is Thomas Novak. You know, a little bit of disparity between Craig Button's list and Bob McKenzie's list, if he's a, you know, sort of a bottom first-round pick or a second-round pick. But, you know, a centerman, 6 feet, around 175 pounds. What do you like about Thomas Novak's game the most?
Yeah, probably his vision and playmaking. You know, we've gone through different people in Kyle Connor and Jack Eichel and Brock Boeser. You know, those are three people that really get up and go, kind of Steve Stamkos type players that have pop to their game. You know, where Tommy Novak's, you know, more of a prototypical centerman where he looks to make plays first, make passes. I think he can skate, but he plays with a lot of different gears and, you know, turns back, slows it down, always looking for that pass. So, you know, he's more of a disher than he is a scorer.
Carey, Colin White plays for the National Development Program in the USHL, not to be confused with former New Jersey Devils That's defenseman right. Colin White. And I know that he's kind of, it's fluctuated a little bit where he's been ranked. He's kind of pegged to go late first round, early second round. What have you seen of him in the USHL this year? And I guess, what do you see his ceiling as an NHLer?
Yeah, there's, you know, the jury's still out a little bit on Colin White. He's a player that really came into our league, into the national program in Ann Arbor with high expectations. And sometimes youngsters have a tough time living up to the hype and the projections. And that's something that he's been probably dealing with. I think, you know, some games you see that elite talent, and that's why he's rated near the end of the first round. But, you know, it's more than a consistency issue with him. You know, he's had games where he's been very quiet and, you know, he's got to add a consistency to his game, not only his playmaking and his scoring, but his physicality as well. So it'll be a little bit of a risk, and imagine that, you know, 5 years from now, it'll be either a great pick or not so great. And so it'll be, see if he slips out of the first round and the second round, as some people now are projecting him.
Right around that same area, Carey, is Eric Foley. He's a left winger with Cedar Rapids of the USHL. Under 6 feet, which, you know, in this day and age is considered small, maybe years ago wouldn't have been as big of a deal. What are the strengths of his game?
Yeah, you know, he is under 6 feet, but he doesn't play like it. You know, he's a real strong individual, you know, well put together frame. So he owns the puck in the corners, and he can come out of the corners. He's got acceleration and playmaking abilities, and then he's got a great shot. You know, he can score from the perimeter. You know, one of the things that people are looking at in hockey is how many goals are scored in or around the blue paint, the goalie crease. And, you know, if you do statistics, it's a large, large number. But you do have to have some special guys that can score from the perimeter, and he's one of them with not only his wrist shot, but he's got a good slapper as well.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Fargo Force head coach general manager Carey Eads as we discuss the draft-eligible prospects from the United States Hockey League.
There's a ton of them this year.
There's an absolute ton of them. And another one, a guy who's sort of ranked to be right at the end of the first round or early in the second round, also played with the U.S. National Team Development Program. That's Jack Roslovich, center/right winger. What do you like about Roslovich's game?
Yeah, he's a guy you know, opposite of Colin White that had a lot of hype coming in. He was under the radar a little bit, probably one of the last picks to the national program. But he's really complimented some top players as he's come in and, you know, kind of the ditch digger a little bit, digging pucks out of the corner, you know, getting to the net front, screening for the players, you know, just back checking hard and being good in defensive position so the offensive players can maybe cheat a little bit. But, you know, that's one guy that's really moved up the rankings, you know, from when he first entered our league. And I like his game, and not to take anything away from his skill as well. I think you need to be, you know, realize what your strengths are, you know, and he does that, but he's also really willing to compliment those top-end players. And those guys are kind of hard to find as well.
Kerry, you know, wanted to get away from, you know, the USHL prospects for a second, and it's tough with the draft coming up in less than a week, the first round coming up. But I wanted to ask you about Dave Haxtell. Drew mentioned you were an assistant with the University of North Dakota program for Larry, a long time there in UND, and we won't ask you what you think the new nickname is going to be. But how nice how nice was it for you to see that your friend Dave Haxtell got hired in the NHL by Philadelphia?
Yeah, obviously tremendously proud of Dave. You know, he's a player that I recruited in North Dakota in my first stint in the late 80s. And, you know, a good farm boy from Alberta that really had some, you know, honest values and did a tremendous job as an assistant coach at North Dakota. And then, I believe, 2004 was named head coach. He took over from Dean Blaze when Dean left to the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, and I had been out of college hockey for a little while and, you know, was interested in the head job. And he said, hey, if you're interested in the head job, would you come back and be my assistant? And it was a great relationship for 8 years. We had a lot of tremendous success making five Frozen Fours in those 8 years. And he's a guy that his attitude, his mentality, everything projects well to the NHL and pro level. You know, I mean, obviously you get some guys that in the college ranks and junior ranks that are a lot more rah-rah, maybe a little bit old school as, you know, as far as in your face. But, you know, I think that his calmness, his intelligence of the game, how he treats his players at a professional level is really going to enable him to have success at Philly. And, you know, I think you look at John Cooper coming out of the USHL and, you know, his success with the Tampa Bay team and everything he's done there. It's starting to create some more opportunities, not only for college guys, but also for major, junior, and USHL coaches as we look to move up the ladder.
You know, final question for you, Kerry, about your new gig with the Fargo Force. You know, people always talk about going down to UND to see the hockey, you know, team play there, not using the name, so the hockey team play down there. But also, you know, Ezzy and I have been down to Fargo. We've actually seen a game, the USHL game, the Fargo Force play. Can you talk about that? Maybe some Winnipeggers want to take the trip down to see your squad play.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm a Vancouver boy and a BC native myself, so I know all about the Western Hockey League and grew up in that. And, you know, I know that the Manitoba fans, you know, can really relate to that as well. But, you know, we've got a great product down here. As we talked about, you know, 15 guys in the first two rounds of the NHL draft. So another hour down the road from Grand Forks is some great shopping, and we have a great venue, close to 5,000 seats. We average between 35 and 4,000 fans a game, and you can see these type of players as they're growing up, and I think it really makes it much more interesting to watch the NHL down the road when you can say you saw Jonathan Toews play when he played at North Dakota, or, you know, you saw Jack Eichel play when he played the USHL, so on and so forth. And true hockey fans love that part of it, and we welcome them to come down.
Kerry Eads is the head coach and general manager of the Fargo Force of the USHL. He joins us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Kerry, appreciate your time, and thanks very much, and best of luck with the Fargo Force.
Yeah, Drew and Richard, great. Enjoy your show a lot, and have a great summer. It's an exciting week and leading up to the NHL draft, isn't it?
Absolutely it is, Kerry.
And Kerry, Ezra's here too.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Thanks, Kerry. Appreciate your time this morning.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Big thanks to Kerry Eads, head coach and general manager of the Fargo Force, for joining us to discuss the USHL's draft eligible prospects. A big thanks to Guy Flaming, co-host of the Pipeline Show on TSN 1260 Edmonton, for joining us earlier in the program to discuss the WHL's draft eligible prospects. In case you missed either of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes, on illegalcurve.com, and on tsn1290.ca. This segment of the program is brought to you by our good friends at Royal Sports, the city's number one hockey shop, plus so much more like soccer, baseball, bikes, skateboards, and the city's largest selection of athletic and casual footwear. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. As I was driving past the Pembina location this morning, big tent sale going on this weekend, of course, at Royal Sports. So check them out on Pembina and, of course, the other location on Raleigh.
I am going to go check them out because I've got a trip coming up. Get some fresh gear, Drew.
You
got to have the freshest gear, right?
You need a new pair of Vans or something?
You got to get a new pair of Vans, and, you know, I got to get, you know, some shirts, you know, some hat.
How's that baseball bat that you said you were purchasing going?
I didn't end up going to buy one.
Because you don't play baseball.
I got some new pants there, hockey pants, and what else? Oh, gloves.
Last time we played hockey,
they're really good.
Richie was lighting it up.
Really?
Like, Rich was like...
I missed the last
like,
game.
Rick was in net. But Richie was scoring like he was, you know, putting it through his legs. He was scoring on the right side, wrist shot, slap shot, breakaways. It was like, it was all the hockey pants.
It was all the hockey pants, yeah. The pants scored.
Yeah. You didn't really have much to do with it.
Rick Ralph was letting some goals in, though. Last time
we played,
he wasn't as good. But a few months ago when we were playing out at River Heights, you couldn't score on Rick. Remember that? I think Drew was the only one that scored on him. Yeah. Or were you on Rick's team?
Rick Raw.
I don't remember. It was a long time ago, and my brain doesn't work nearly as well.
You were flying out there, Drew. You were looking pretty good.
I actually had a jetpack propelled to me. That's why I was flying at that point in time. UFA of the week time. Here's a clip of the gentleman we'll be discussing.
Here's Tage in alone on a breakaway, and Niemi with the save, rebound comes out to Tage. Niemi again. It's still alive. Tage again, and Niemi again, and Antti Niemi keeps it 1-0. Slams his stick on the crossbar.
They're going to need to get a replay to see how many shots Taves just took.
Antti Niemi quite simply saying, Jonathan Taves, you will not score.
I'm really interested to see what Taves gets on
that. I knew you were going to say
Randy
that.
There.
Yeah, Antti Niemi. Jonathan Taves would be a lot more of an interesting topic if he was a UFA, but that's never going to happen. Yeah. It would be stunning if that's going to happen at any point in his career. Anyways, Antti Niemi, most recently played with the San Jose Sharks. Before that, of course, with the Chicago Blackhawks when he won a Stanley Cup last season, 31-23-7. 2.59 goals against average, a .914 save percentage, and a salary cap hit of $3.8 million. Richie, I know you don't love Antti Niemi.
No, I mean, I don't hate him. I just don't think he's anything special. He's a goalie that can give you some solid performances on a really good team that he's not going to be winning you games. And one goal in one game does not make a season, but the San Jose Sharks come to town. It's their biggest game of the year in Winnipeg, and he lets in a goal from the corner. I think it was Adam Lowry fired it from the corner. So the point is like, this is a guy that they were probably going to bail off from, San Jose was, and the players vouch for him. He's just not that good, guys. And we're talking about a market that has a ton of young goaltenders available. Now, they're not UFAs, but they have an upside that Niemi does not have. Robin Leonard, you know,
Cam Talbot.
Yeah. Eddie Lack. If it's Jakob Markstrom, you think he's really good. I haven't seen him play, but apparently playing really well. I haven't seen him play in a while. Play really well in the AHL. I mean, there's a bunch of options here of guys who can be better than what you've seen. And I don't think Niemi's going to be any better than what you've seen. He could perform back to that level, maybe. But I just don't think he's anything special. I mean, he's a guy, to me, he's going to get a one-year deal. I mean, San Jose hasn't written him off yet. They say they might bring him back. But on a one-year deal, and you're looking at probably, you know, $1 to $2 million. I don't think he's going to get much more than that.
So a significant pay cut coming off a year where he made $3.8 million.
Yes. Yeah, Richie mentioned Doug Wilson yesterday because they decided not to bring back a few players. Scott Hannon was one of them. Always liked Scott Hannon. Had a really good NHL career. And John Scott. But he said it's possible. But I agree with Richie.
It's possible because they don't have a goaltender. I guess they have Alex Stalock under contract.
Yeah, you're right. It's possible because they need a goalie.
Yeah, so you know, Antti Niemi, we know, you know, he won the Stanley Cup with Chicago in 2010, and he's kind of struggled. But, I mean, this is still a guy that won 30 games for the Sharks last year. His numbers are pretty good. And with Niemi, I agree with Rich, Niemi was never kind of an elite NHL goaltender. Yeah. He's a number one goaltender. I think he could still be a number one goaltender. And, you know, last week we were talking about Kari Lehtinen kind of having a down year. And, you know, the San Jose Sharks and their defense is kind of in a rebuilding process. You know, we mentioned Mirko Mueller when we had Guy Flamion on. He kind of struggled in his rookie season. So for me, Antti Niemi, you're looking at, you know, Rich mentions, you know, a year, probably won't get more than that, Rich, right? Like a year or 2 years. And he's not going to command that $5, $6 million elite goaltending money, right? But to me, there's still so many question marks with teams such as Edmonton, right? Edmonton clearly probably wants to bring in two new goaltenders, at least one. And there are a lot of teams that I think would like to have Antti Niemi as a backup.
Yeah, that's a good point. As a veteran backup to a young player, you push him. He's been there before. You can rely on him if you need to. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Niemi's going to have to accept
Dallas,
that.
Dallas, which you were talking
about
last
week. Fair enough.
You know, that has kind of struggled.
Both finish, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's not a demotion for him. I mean, we've seen this. We've seen this in Winnipeg. We've seen this almost in every single city, with the exception of a few. I mean, you don't see this in New York with Lundqvist, and you don't see this in Montreal with Carey Price. But there isn't the 70-game-a-year goalie anymore, unless you're one of those two goalies. Like, the Martin Brodeur, you know, that era of those goalies, like, there's only a few goalies that can play that amount. And I think Antti Niemi you'd probably want on a team that's either an established team already or that has a number one goalie there. Because I think, you know, as Richie mentioned, there's a lot of good goaltenders that are options for a team like Edmonton. You know, Robin Lehner is an option for Edmonton. And so with Antti Niemi, I agree with Rich. I think he's going to get a contract. And, hey, he might end up staying in San Jose.
It'll be interesting because, I mean, if the...
I think that's probably less likely, though.
That he stays in San Jose. Well, San Jose needs a goaltender,
though. I would say it's probably 80-90% chance that he goes UFA.
You know, if he doesn't want to take a big pay cut, and by the sounds of what we're speculating, you know, he's probably in line for a pay cut based on his previous performance and his previous contract.
And based on supply and demand of the market.
Supply and demand of the market, too. This is also a guy who nothing would, you know, this could be a guy who goes back and plays in Finland, or maybe goes and becomes a guy who plays for, gets a big money deal to go play overseas a little bit more than some of the other guys. You know, Finnish goaltender, of course, I mean, and I'm speculating here, just putting, you know, reading tea leaves. They certainly have no evidence of that necessarily. But if he doesn't want to take a one-year deal to be a backup for $1 million in the NHL, you can go play overseas for, you know, $3 million and play a lot, you know, and reap the benefits of that.
Yeah, I don't think it's out of the question, Drew. I haven't heard that he's considering that as an option. But, you know, again, you look at the quality of goaltenders. And another guy that, you know, I think we're going to talk about a little bit later is Cam Talbot. When he took over for Henrik Lundqvist in New York, mm-hmm. I mean, they didn't miss a beat. Cam Talbot's a really good goaltender, and I could see Edmonton making a big push for him because he's a pending free agent after the coming year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of goaltenders that are knocking at the door to be number one goaltenders in the NHL. Richie mentioned, you know, Markstrom in Vancouver there with Eddie Lack and Ryan Miller. So Antti Niemi, as far as the free agent goalies go, might be at the top of that list, but there's other goalies that teams are trying to acquire right now.
It'll be interesting. It all gets underway July 1st with NHL free agency. Complete coverage, of course, here on TSN 1290. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look around the NHL trade rumors, who's on the trade block, who might be, what teams might be asking too much for players. Lots of news and notes still to come on the program. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
If you're Bodog right now, what are the odds of Phil Kessel being traded?
I'm trying to think. The reason I'm hesitating is, you know, going up to the trade deadline, you know, we had the percentages board. And I can't remember if it was 50-50 or it was 60-40. I think it improved to 50-50 that Kessel would be traded at the draft or, you know, at some point. I'm going to stick with that. And as we get closer to the draft and our conversations continue with certain sources, I'm not sure that won't change in a negative direction if you're not a Kessel fan, in that it has to be the right deal. It has to be the right deal because, you know, he's still an age-sensitive player.
Mm-hmm.
He's not in his 30s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a
28
guy,
this fall,
I mean,
right?
Yeah. This is a player that, okay.
These are the prime years.
There is prime years. Now, you know, if they can find a centerman that's better suited, or they can kick JVR and the you-know-what to get him to play the game with a little bit more bite, you know, maybe you got something there. And I think that applies to a few different players, too, and Phaneuf included. I don't think it applies to Joffrey Lupul. I think they'll do whatever they can to unload that deal.
TSN's Darren Dreger. Another week, another day, another week, another discussion of Phil Kessel and his trade status, and if
the
he's
Leafs
long
are already so nauseating. Oh,
Richie, what are the percentage chances that Drew has a second cupcake?
I haven't had a first cupcake, thank you, sir.
Well, I still think it's pretty high percentage. I think it was 50-50, went down to 60-40, but it's back to 50-50.
I still haven't had a first cupcake. Why don't you deal with the first cupcake before you get to the second cupcake? This segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Phil Hanley in town, his final night in town. A lot of great upcoming comedians, Gilbert Gottfried, as we've mentioned before, with a concert series event, and of course John Lovitz coming up at the end of July. All shows are sold out for that. Tickets available, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Have we set a date yet for the Drew Mandel roast at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club?
We really do need to do that.
You guys can
you
go
can,
ahead.
You know what, Drew? You can roast me if you want. Do an Ezra Ginsberg roast. You can do prime rib. Whatever you want.
It's more like roast. I think it would be more like rump roast than it would be prime rib, let me tell you. Anyways, back onto the, you know, that's the downside of the hot stove season here in the NHL, is that we're back to talking about Phil Kessel again.
Oh, it's just like, let's talk more about the Leafs players who are overpaid, underperforming, and then beat it to death.
If you're the Leafs at this point in time,
six geniuses working there, I'm sure they can find a good deal for
him. But you know, if you're the Leafs at this point in time, and you have him under contract, and it's certainly an overpay, but you've brought in this brand new head coach that you think is going to turn the entire organization around and lead them back on a path to success, and the trade offers for Phil Kessel aren't outstanding because somebody's got to take a big salary on, why are you that eager to get rid of him? I don't understand. I mean, I know he's got his problems with the media, and he's not a, you know, a warm personality, but he can score goals like very few others can in the NHL. Why not hold on to him and see what Mike Babcock can do with him?
I mean, I don't mind that strategy, Drew. I mean, because the truth is, you have him for so long, you're going to try and maximize your return. I mean, does Mike Babcock have a great history with guys who don't love playing defense? I mean, Yuri Hudler comes to mind in terms of a guy he never really trusted in Detroit in defensive situations, and they eventually let him go because he was a liability. Babcock thought in his own zone, and Kessel, if you've ever seen him back check or play in his own zone, it's not exactly something you want to show on the video to the other players to demonstrate how to play D. So, I mean, that could be a factor. They know it's going to go that way. They know he might not buy in. They obviously have more information than we do on that. So, I mean, there are numerous aspects of that in terms of will his value increase or decrease with time, and will teams know that he's available now, but you have that ambiguity in terms of maybe he does succeed with Babcock as opposed to later on where he might know that, hey, this is not working, that they need to get rid of this guy, and all the leverage they have is gone. They're already have limited leverage now. They could have less leverage in 3 months, I mean 4 or 5 months time. I had heard that Kessel was going to be the one staying versus Phaneuf, who would be the one traded. That's what I had heard. So we'll see if that comes to fruition or not. Certainly they would trade both guys if they got the right deal, but they're overvaluing these guys right now. They're pumping them up in the media. You don't think this is intentional?
Of course
100%.
And that's exactly what they should be doing, is to try and make them out to be, you know, there's no reason. I mean, you don't have a burning urgency to trade these guys. It's not like, you know, you're up against the deadline where you have to trade them by. I mean, pump them up now, and then if you want them out by, you know, the draft or by free agency, well, then, you know, you become more realistic a week from now. It's, you know, we've talked about deadline hunting on the show on more than one occasion. To me, you know, even if you give it a chance and you see what you got, and maybe it doesn't work out, if you waited 6 months, what's the worst case scenario is that you've got less amount of term and money remaining on the contract. You're Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. Who cares if you've paid a guy $8 million
right.
a year?
Right.
So, I mean, if you think that the deal might improve or maybe becomes, less of a distraction if he is. I mean, I don't know if that's fair to call him a distraction, but, I just don't see why you're necessarily running to make the trade at this moment.
And the situation for Phil Kessel and Toronto hasn't changed much from prior to the trade deadline. What has changed? He still has a lot of term left on his contract, Richie, and he's still the same player, and there's still a finite amount of teams that mm-hmm. want to acquire him.
Absolutely.
The amount of teams that want a Dion Phaneuf, and I realize, Dion Phaneuf is coming off not his greatest year. Who on Toronto really had a great year?
That's true.
I mean, it was a disaster there this year. I think, here Detroit was very close to acquiring Dion Phaneuf. It's been reported.
Now they're out on him now, as of yesterday.
Yeah. And
which is probably just a public posturing move more than anything, I
right,
suspect.
Right. So, is that list, how big is that list? Is it three or four teams? If the list for Dion Phaneuf is three or four teams, then Phil Kessel might be one or two teams. I mean, I still think, Drew, to answer your question originally in the segment, I do think that they must be considering keeping him. But I think that when it comes to Phil Kessel, I think you're getting a player, as you mentioned, he's an elite scorer, but he does have weaknesses to his game.
Let me ask you guys this, though.
And they're glaring weaknesses. Like, we've watched Phil Kessel play against the Jets. We watched him play at the international level. I mean, when he chooses to play, he can be an elite goal scorer, but he's not good defensively.
Yeah.
And he's not like it's not that I'm the most fit guy at all either, but it's not exactly like he's,
you don't get paid,
he's the type of guy.
But let me ask you guys this.
National Hockey League.
Phil Kessel is, I mean,
and you're running a marathon tomorrow too.
He's got a history of being just about a point per game player in the league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not this past year was a bad year, but he still put up 25 goals and 60 points. But the year before,
Drew,
before
you get finished, his skill set is incredible in that he's a tremendous skater. He gets from 0 to 60 very quickly. He's got a great wrist shot. A great release. He's actually probably a better passer than people give him credit for.
Yep.
43 assists, 45 assists.
And he's instant offense, meaning he can go throughout a game and do absolutely nothing. He's not going to help you other ways. And then, boom, two goals. Like that, because that's how quick strike his ability is.
Right.
And he can score from anywhere. And, you talk, was it Carey Eads or was it Guy Flaming talking about scoring from outside, the blue, the crease and the hash marks? Yeah. Well, Kessel can do that.
Let me ask you, if Phil Kessel, or any guy who, let's say Phil Kessel, if he hit free agency, he's working on an 8-year, $64 million contract mm-hmm. right now. Given his numbers that he's put up in the NHL, being almost a point-a-game player,
yes.
doesn't he get if 8 years and $64 million again?
He can't get 8 years as a UFA, but
right,
7 years.
7 years, doesn't he get $8 million salary cap hit a season?
It's a very fair point.
So everyone says overpaid. I'm not certain that he really is overpaid.
In that context, though, Drew, you're only giving up money.
Right. You're right. And then to acquire him, you have to give up an asset as well. And I get that. And money. I don't think he's necessarily overpaid. Everybody in the NHL who's a point-a-game player is going to make $8 million a year. I mean, I would take Phil Kessel on my team.
The problem is, so long as he's your third best player. Not best, third best forward, third best player. Can't be your best forward, in my opinion. You probably want to have a D that's better than him as well.
Do you see what I mean?
Like
he's got to be insulated. They can't have the spotlight on him.
Yes.
But if somebody came to me and said, we need to get him off our books, and we want a first round pick for Phil Kessel, first round pick for Phil Kessel, late first round, whatever it is, Phil Kessel's a dynamite hockey player, and I think people are overlooking and maybe underestimating just how good he is, especially in the right team in the right situation.
And I think that's really changed this past year. I don't think we were talking like this at all even a year ago. I think because of the spotlight that was on him in Toronto and, kind of the blow-ups in the media and what was going on with just, post-Randy Carlyle when they basically couldn't win a hockey game, it's almost like, and Richie, you're right. I mean, these guys get paid a lot of money to be top players. Phil Kessel, I think, took too much of that criticism for just him. I think it was a little bit unfair how he was treated this year, and it was all Phil Kessel's fault and Dion Phaneuf's fault. I mean, these guys are the highest paid players on the team. Phaneuf's the captain. But I mean, Toronto. They gave up on the year this year under Randy Carlyle. They were in a playoff spot.
He's part of that. I mean, he's not extremely overweight. You know, he's probably more your Drew Doughty range of, you know, maybe, but so skilled. Like Dustin Byfuglien was like extremely overweight. Not anymore, and you can see the difference it's made in his game. Mm-hmm. Sure, you want him to be in better shape, but it's not like completely ridiculous, right? I think if you're going through a rebuilding process and you're trying to get a certain type of player and a certain type of mentality on the roster, you may think he needs to move.
I agree with that.
Does that mean he's not useful? No, absolutely not. No, that doesn't mean that. I mean, does Phil Kessel, now the cap problems, cap aside just for a second, does Phil Kessel change the complexion of a team like St. Louis? That's a slower team that can't necessarily one strike beat you. It absolutely does. Mm-hmm. Might make sense. But would he succeed in a team that kind of plays a slower pace and down low, or would he change that? Or you need to put him into a team that plays a fast-paced style and moves the puck, and he can use his skating as a significant advantage, and more of a Chicago Blackhawks style, Tampa Bay style. That might be the case as well. I mean, I would lean towards that because, you know, playing in the other, he's a rush guy. He's a rush player.
I'll tell you what. I can probably count on two hands the number of players when you're watching a game and you're at a game, and the player gets, you know, the puck on his stick with speed through the neutral zone, that you feel as though there's something bad is almost guaranteed to happen if you're cheering for, you know, the opposing team. Kessel's one of those guys who strikes fear and you have to game plan against. And I think there's very few of those guys, and we might be, you know, underrating how dangerous he can be in the right situation.
Does he care enough, and does he make other players better? Not just, I'm not talking about the puck on a stick or playing on line mates. Does he make his teammates better in other ways? Probably not.
And with the salary cap not going up much, Drew, you know that if a team acquires him, it's going to have major implications, right?
They probably could. I mean, if you want to get compensation for him, a pretty good compensation, you're going to have to eat some money.
Yeah.
Yeah. That I agree with.
Phil Kessel at $6 million is a heck of a lot different than Phil at $8 million.
Especially with, and as you mentioned before, with having to throw an asset in or something. Leafs are willing to just salary dump it, it's a completely different conversation their current demands, which I understand why they're making those demands.
Sure,
it makes perfect sense. Yeah, it makes perfect sense to make those demands. Anyways, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Phil Kessel and his future, of course, is a Toronto Maple Leaf. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the other rumors and players who are supposedly on the trade block. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
All right, let's go down our checklist. We've talked about guys who've been on long-term deals and possibility of moving them. We've talked about guys who are RFAs and possibility of them moving on through offer sheets, and you guys poked the Bears an awful lot there. Now let's talk about guys who've got 1 year left in their current deals before they become unrestricted free agents, guys like Milan Lucic and Ryan O'Reilly, who might be on the market.
Well, it's a precarious position for both those guys, and Joe Sakic spoke to the media earlier today, and he said, look, they need to have Ryan O'Reilly's future mapped out by the start of the season. Well, if you let it drift into September, guess what happens? The market shrivels up because teams have already set their roster now, and they're not going to make a bold move because there's a chance that they could get Ryan O'Reilly for free as an unrestricted free agent. So the hot time is right now, and it's at the draft. Otherwise, you get that negotiation done, you extend him, and he stays in Colorado. Milan Lucic is a little bit different, but you're talking about two very good players here and two character guys. Similar situation in terms of the contract, but in Boston, man, this guy is the identity of the Boston Bruins.
That is TSN's Darren Dreger alongside Gino Retta on That's Hockey, discussing Milan Lucic, discussing Ryan O'Reilly, both of whom have 1 year left on their current contracts and are rumored to be available in a trade. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com. To me, Ryan O'Reilly is the more interesting of the two players in terms of potentially being on the trade market. We know the history with Colorado in that he was offer sheeted by the Calgary Flames. You know, this is something about it says to me that Ryan O'Reilly is more likely to be traded than Milan Lucic necessarily. But I think both are certainly going to be discussed on the draft floor entering into next week's draft.
Yeah, they could both move, especially with some of the salary cap problems Boston had earlier this year, Drew. Ryan O'Reilly, I really like him as a player, and you know he obviously had the breakout season. As you mentioned, Calgary had the offer sheet in, and Colorado obviously matched. He's a guy, too, that I think almost hasn't scratched the surface. You forget Ryan O'Reilly's only 24 years old, and Colorado obviously had a bad year, and Ryan O'Reilly struggled offensively, with a lot of the Colorado Avalanche. Nathan MacKinnon had a tough year, and
they all did.
You can go up and down the list, but I think if you're Colorado, and you know you hear Colorado's really interested in signing Andre Sequeira, you know, kind of will fill one of their needs of having a puck moving defenseman. They need a few defensemen. You know, now it's pretty evident, Richie, that you know if they move Ryan O'Reilly, you'd think that they would probably look at bringing in a defenseman. I would think that would be the reason, because Ryan O'Reilly, obviously, you know, he's a good goal scorer, but he's also, you know, one of those players too that can, you know, mix it up. He's physical, and you know he's a guy that you can put out on the penalty kill. I think, you know, Ryan O'Reilly would generate a lot of interest, you know, as far as the trade market goes. I think his offensive upside is higher than Milan Lucic. I like Lucic, too. I mean, Richie was talking about, you know, Boston Bruins, you know, Stanley Cup year. I mean, he is the identity of that team. And I think, you know, the Boston Bruins have kind of switched it to a little bit more of a skill type of game. They're transitioning out of that a little bit.
That's a weird part, because it seemed like when they fired Pierre Chiarelli, Cam Neely kind of calling the shots that he wanted to get back to Bruin hockey in a more physical style, and he felt like they were getting away from that. But money talks at the end of the day, and he's a pending UFA after this year, and can they fit him in?
And
they got signed Dougie Hamilton. I mean, there's not a lot of money there.
There's not a lot of money there. Boston certainly has the salary cap problems. Ryan O'Reilly, if he was to hit unrestricted free agency, is a unique UFA in that you don't see this happen anymore, really at all, where he's 25 years old and he could be available to any team in the league. And this is a guy who's got a 65-point season under his belt. And like you said, Ezzy, I think might even have more available to him. Last year, in a down year, still put up 55 points. He's going to break the bank if he gets the unrestricted free agency.
He's a very good hockey player. He's kind of got a unique, kind of a low skating style, but he's a powerful guy. It's a good shot, and he can set up plays. Like there's a reason why Calgary went after him, Richie. I mean, Calgary saw him as a guy that it's the type of player that can, I think, take a good team and take them to the next level. So I see Ryan O'Reilly going to a team. You know, it might not be in the West. It certainly probably won't be in the division. But I see like a Ryan O'Reilly, like a team like a Pittsburgh, I think there's, or a Montreal, like a team that could really use. I'm not saying that they necessarily are going to just. You could probably put together a list of 6 to 10 teams where you put Ryan O'Reilly in their top six. And especially in the playoffs, he could make, I think, a good team even better.
I don't know if there's any team, Ezzy, in the league that doesn't want a Ryan O'Reilly. And we had Sherry Bassin on 2 weeks ago. He talked about Connor McDavid. But one of the guys we didn't I wanted to discuss. We didn't have the time, and we were talking about the draft. But to discuss with him was former Uri Otter Ryan O'Reilly. I mean, how well-regarded he is. Because he's the type of guy you can play on the power play, you can play on the penalty kill.
Mm-hmm.
He's like Jonathan Toews. I mean, he's not Jonathan Toews, but he's like Jonathan Toews.
He's got a physical edge.
That's the kind of player. I mean, they're very similar. That's the kind of player that he is. So when you have a guy, I mean, is he a natural point producer? I mean, you mentioned the 65 points. Well, do you want to count on him to be that natural guy? No. But he can certainly play in your top six, can play in your top line, your second line, can third line, can play in any situation. Both the guys we're talking about here, Lucic and O'Reilly, are not your natural guys just going to pop goals whenever they want. O'Reilly can do more for your team than Lucic can. Lucic can bring a mentality to your squad and needs to be playing a physical style and can shoot the puck, will go to the net, and really can get hot. He can impose his will on games. O'Reilly will help you win more games, in my opinion, and has a significant value on the market. And if they're trading him, with both players being pending UFAs, I think Elliot Friedman mentioned this, but I totally agree. If you're trading for one of those guys, don't you have to get a window to negotiate? And doesn't that help Colorado and Boston get more of a package back for those players? Because they're going to get something back from them anyways. You think about the fact that you guys mentioned the age of those players.
Mm-hmm.
Now, O'Reilly plays a physical style as well, but Lucic's style is so physical, you worry about the burnout
he's
of a guy like that.
You know what's unique, though? I mean, you know, people are going to think that I'm related to Ryan O'Reilly or something, but he has a physical edge, but, he, you know...
Your name is Ezra O'Ginsberg.
Yeah, well, I'm a quarter Irish, so maybe that's part of it. But
I thought you were a third Irish.
A third. No, but...
our buddy once had once went to school with somebody who said that they were a third Irish.
Remember we were at the draft in Philly, and we were out with Jeff O'Neill, and I told Jeff O'Neill, you know, I'm a quarter Irish, and he goes, "You're not Irish." It's like, what are you, a quarter? What is that? But, no, Ryan O'Reilly has a
because you were drinking Irish whiskey at that point in time.
No, but O'Reilly has a physical style, but he doesn't take any penalty minutes. He had 2 penalty minutes last year.
Yeah. That's right.
Or 2 years ago.
12 last year. He was a goon last year. He had 12 penalty minutes.
But he actually has, like, this ability. He's really strong in the puck.
Yeah,
like,
he's
one of those guys
shy.
That I could see him, you know, a few years down the road, maybe next year. He could be a 70, 80-point guy.
Well, I don't know about that. I think he's not going to get more than 65. That 1
well,
year that he had a big
we're splitting
year.
Splitting hairs. 65, 70, I mean.
I don't think he's that.
I said 80. I guess 60, I might have gone a little far
I think
with
80, 65 is an average. I think he's more of a 50 to 60 point guy who's going to give you everything you need.
He's had 2 55 point years last year.
Well, Richie, I'll take him in the hockey pool this year. He'll get me 71 points. And
sure. I would be more attracted to O'Reilly on the market than Lucic. I think he'll get more for a package. If I'm Colorado, I do look to extending him, and I know they have a defensive need, but I wouldn't say, okay, I have O'Reilly, I need a defensive need. I would say I want to keep O'Reilly, especially in the mix of what you have. You have the skill and speed of McKinnon and Duchene. You have Iginla's getting older. Tangi obviously is getting older. And you have Landeskog, who's they probably want a little more progress from him. But O'Reilly is that guy that you need to make mesh there. And I know it's a lot of money on your forwards, but you have Tyson Berry and Eric Johnson. You have to find another way to get a lefty, two lefties there. And I know it's not going to be easy, but O'Reilly wouldn't be the guy. If I can sign him at a fair value contract, and I realize the poison pill with Calgary has made that difficult, and he's coming up on a $6.2 million deal here, and he's going to be a UFA, and that'll probably be a starting point for negotiations, even though there's no arbitration because he's a UFA. The starting point for negotiations is probably what he made, and that's a high number. But if I can get him in even a little bit more than what I think is reasonable, I would want to bring that guy back before trading him for a D.
Can the Avs pay him more than they paid Matt Duchene? They signed Duchene to that 5-year, $30 million contract last season. You know, has that established?
They're going to have to.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to. And does Matt Duchene want a guy like that on his team rather than not and make a little bit less? Probably doesn't care. Makes everybody better.
It'll be interesting to see how the Bruins handle Lucic and how the Avs handle Ryan O'Reilly. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to do another UFA of the week.
This is good.
You want to do this one, or you want to do Marty St. Louis, or do you want to do Johnny Oduya?
Why don't we do both, Drew?
Yeah, let's
why
both,
are you trying
man.
To limit us over here?
Let's do both. We got some cupcakes. I mean,
we're going crazy.
Why don't we talk about the package for Patrick Sharp too?
Okay, we'll talk about the package for Patrick Sharp as well. We're going crazy here. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Great play by Boyle at the line to hold the line. Here comes Brassard. Cross ice pass. Martin score. Martin St. Louis' first goal of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And the Rangers have a 4-1 lead.
And it's the two former Tampa Cup champions that make this play. Bishop loses his focus on where the puck is. And Brassard with a perfect pass. And St. Louis, his longest drought. 18 games he had gone without scoring. The longest of the year. Doesn't look that excited at all, does he?
The one and only goal scored by Martin St. Louis in the 2015 Stanley Cup playoffs. 19 games played, 1 goal, 6 assists, 7 points, and a cap hit of $5.625 million. What's more troubling to you? The lack of goal production in the playoffs or the 40 years old that he's going to be? And he currently is as they get underway if he decides he wants to play in the 2015-16 NHL season.
Well, I don't think Martin Louis' conditioning and shape has ever been an issue. I think it's a matter of, you know, father time here.
Can he do it anymore?
He can do it. I just don't think at the level that you expect before.
Does he want to do it?
I think he probably wants to do it, Ezzy, and I think he probably wants to stay in that area. We know that he wants to be close to Connecticut. So is it the Islanders? Is it the Rangers?
The Devils, he would actually probably drop their age a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Is it the Flyers? Is it
lots of teams in the Northeast?
Washington. It was one of those teams, really. Those are the close teams, I think, that you're going to be considering. Even Pittsburgh, maybe a little bit further away for that spot, because I think you can trust him to play on your second line wing. Expectations have to be more in line with 20 goals and 45 points. That's probably
Montreal
an maybe as
the
well.
The thing is, Rich, I think, you know, he hasn't come out and said that he hasn't needed to say anything. The playoffs just ended for the New York Rangers, but I guess because of his age, I do think, especially when you have Jaromir Jagr that's going to be playing in the NHL this year at 44 years old, and I think Marty St. Louis, you could argue, is Jagr's in pretty good shape too.
The problem
both of these guys are in good shape and have always been in good shape, so I don't think that's a question. I think you're right, Rich. I think it's, as a player, how effective can he be? And he didn't have the best playoffs. Pretty decent regular season, though.
52 points.
Even though he struggled a little bit. 52 points. I mean, better than 80% of the players in the
Fair
NHL.
Fair enough. 20 goals, 25 assists, around there. 45 points, what you have to expect from that, I think. He skates pretty well. He's not the best skater. But the difference between Jagr and St. Louis is Jagr is... just so skilled, but Jagr's so big.
Both of these guys are Hall of Famers as soon as they retire.
I agree that they're both Hall of Famers. Jagr's the next level compared to St. Louis or many others, almost everybody, really. But Jagr's age is less of a factor because of the size of Jagr. I mean, his thighs are the size of this room, and it's so hard to get off the puck in the corner. St. Louis does not have the luxury of the size to compensate for his lack of foot speed, which Jagr does have now. He's lost foot speed, but he's big enough and he can protect the puck. He's probably better than anybody at that, that he can maneuver and control the puck out there, whereas St. Louis is tiny. And so you lose a step, half a step, it makes a world of difference.
It'll be interesting. So what is St. Louis, if assuming he wants to play for another season, what is he looking at?
One year, $2.5 million, something like that.
Does he get? Okay, so sort of.
And that's a good deal, I think. I think, you know, when you're talking about Marty St. Louis, you look at how Brad Richards worked out in Chicago. He signed a one-year, $2 million deal, Rich.
Mm-hmm.
And Brad Richards was not someone who was relied upon for primary offense in Chicago. Right. But he played a nice role on the third line for the Chicago Blackhawks. And it's not just offense. When you talk about these guys, you know, we talked about Kimmo Tiiminen with Frank Saravalli. It's not just about that. It's their presence and the influence that they have on the younger players. That matters a lot. You hear... you know, players and coaches, they talk about this a lot, having a guy like Marty St. Louis on your team. And I realize it didn't work out with him, you know, requesting the trade. But to me, you know, that happened over a year ago. You got to let that stuff go.
Well, him and Stevie Yzerman don't see anywhere close to that.
No, I mean, but to me,
Not
Marty,
just because Yzerman's taller.
But you know what I mean, Drew? It's at this point, you know, that's water under the bridge.
Well,
you can't hold that against him.
But that's how he plays. That's what's fueled him his entire career, is the doubters. And that's fine.
He's never drafted.
I know. People get fuel, you know, by a lot of different ways. And Marty St. Louis, you know, uses the slight, not only the slight nature, but the slight of never being drafted and always being underestimated as the fuel to keep his career burning. And that's fine.
He's had a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah,
Stanley Cup. He's got the Olympic gold. I mean, this guy is—he's done it all,
World
and
Cup.
I think at this point, I don't think he wants to go to a team. I mean, I know Richie mentioned his family's in Connecticut. I don't think he's going to a team like New Jersey, because I think he wants to win a Stanley Cup.
I think he could go to a team like the Washington Capitals, like you mentioned. You know, a team that needs some wingers and everything else.
Yeah, I mean, Washington makes sense. They could use some help on the wings. I think he makes a lot of sense on the island.
Sure.
Because it's a young team that has a ton of speed, so it can maybe make up for and help him. Yeah, kind of like Chicago with Richards, guys. I mean, St. Louis skates better than Richards, but the idea is the speed of the team helps him. Young guys, offense could use a veteran presence on the roster who's been through it. I think it makes a lot of sense, and he's close by. And Connecticut and New York, same thing really here.
Yeah.
So I think a move to Brooklyn might be something that makes sense for him on a cheap deal.
I don't disagree. Another player that's actually been rumored as Washington potentially being interested is Patrick Sharp. And we know that the Blackhawks have tremendous salary cap problems, and we heard that Sharp is the guy who's probably going to be on his way out. But the asking price that the Blackhawks are requesting,
rumored,
is... They want one of those defensemen. They might want a defenseman. You know, they've got Calvin DeHaan there. they've got, you know, I know
you're talking about Washington, Griffin. Andrew.
I was talking about Washington more than the Islanders. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about the Islanders.
No, no. But, I mean, you know, Patrick Sharp, who didn't have a great regular season, to put it mildly, you know, especially after the tremendous 2013-14 that he had. You know, Patrick Sharp, I mean, are the Blackhawks going to get what they're supposedly asking, which is, you know, a first-round pick, and they're talking about a prospect who's ready to step in, and, you know, a big haul for a guy that's, you know, it seems like his, well, I mean, it's hard to say what he is. Is he a 45-point player? Probably not. No. But is he an 80-point player? I'm not sure that he is either.
He's a great hockey player. To me, this is really interesting because teams know, Richie, that Chicago needs to move him. And a lot of teams want him. So you'd think, okay, well, maybe they're asking for too much with the first-round pick and the roster player. But are you? I mean, you know, I know everybody likes to say, well, what kind of point producer is he? Patrick Sharp's a really good hockey player. He's got great speed. He can play in any position. He's a very smart hockey player. And I think, you know, when you're talking about a Washington, for example, I think there are a lot of teams, especially teams that are a little bit younger in their top six. Like Washington, I think some of these teams, you know, you're relying on some younger players like Kuznetsov and Burakovsky. So you have a Patrick Sharp on your team. That kind of changes the dynamic of your team a little bit.
You get 2 years of him.
Yep.
At 5.9 cap hit, 33-34 years old, is he? So, I mean, is he getting any better? No. Is he playing with better players? Well, maybe Washington is just as good players in terms of offensive talent. If you can fit him in your cap, I don't think he is that prime time guy, but he's certainly a top six forward. And as you mentioned, the flex, I think that's a really interesting point, and I agree with Ezzy in terms of playing left wing, right wing, center if you need him to. He can play anywhere.
And they're losing Joel Ward, right?
So I mean, it
the
could
Capitals.
Be, yeah. It could be some. I don't think there'll be a. I don't think he'll get what Chicago's apparently asking for right now because his cap number's big and he's only got 2 years left and he's getting older. But I do think that he certainly provides value. I don't think he necessarily is the player that he was 3-4 years ago. I don't think he is anymore. But I don't think he could create for himself in the playoffs, and that was apparent as far as I'm concerned.
He is unique, though, among the guys who are rumored to be available in that he does have 2 years left
yes.
on his deal.
Yes.
So that's even more appealing to teams that might be trading for him is that they know they got cost certainty. They know his cap hit's going to be $5.9 million. His actual salary is a little bit less in each of the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. But you know, you're not going to have to trade him a huge amount and then pay him a huge amount right afterwards. So that's a little bit of a more appealing thing. Sticking with the Blackhawks, UFA Johnny Oduya, obviously familiar to fans here in Winnipeg, coming off of a three-year $10.125 million contract, a cap hit of $3.375 million. Hard to believe that Johnny Oduya is going to find a better spot to be than Chicago again, but can the Blackhawks afford to pay him what he's probably going to ask for?
So people are aware the reason they're going to have this huge cap crunch is because Brandon Saad's up as an RFA, mm-hmm. and then they also have Marcus Kruger up as an RFA. Those are the big ones for them. Okay, so.
And then you got the contracts of Taves and Kane kicking in.
That's exactly right. So you have all these things being, you know, becoming a factor, right? 10.5 cap hit for both of the aforementioned players there. Do you carve out Sharp and Bickle and Versteeg to as a way to alleviate that stress and maybe find a way to get Oduya in there with Saad? Maybe, depending on Saad and what kind of a contract we're talking about there. Does he get to RFA status? There's a lot of factors here. I mean, Oduya's going to want to see what's on the market, too. It's the last big deal, likely, for him.
Yeah.
And he's got his cups. Now, he flourishes in a system like he is now, defending, not defending very often, quick transition plays, getting the puck out of his own zone, all that stuff. That's really important. He's got to go somewhere where that fits. I mean, you know, I can think of a place that actually he'd fit quite well, the Islanders. Because what you have with the Islanders now, you have Hamonic. With him in the first round series, they might have won that series. Went
sure.
to seven games. They were certainly outplayed in game seven. Hamonic's on the island. Boychuk's on the island. Nick Leddy, if you were to add an Oduya into that top four and throw DeHaan back into a bottom six role, you would really have a nice transition team. So I can see that. I can see a lot of teams wanting to pay that guy to move the puck out of their own zone. Chicago is going to have a hole on that left side. I mean, how are they going to fill that internally? I don't know.
Wow.
The guys they have, Van Riemsdyk, Rimblad, haven't cut it, plus their right side guys. So
Timonen's not coming back either.
No, right. Timonen retired. It explains why there's a lot of talk that they're interested in Mike Riley, the former Columbus Blue Jackets draft pick, who's going to be hit free agency as an unsigned draft pick.
But you look at Chicago's cap it on the back end, and they're spending about, $15 million bucks on Chalmers and Keith and Seabrook. That's a bargain. So yeah. I mean, there is money if you look at it that way. That Crawford hit of $6 million on the back on the goal, while he won the second cup, give him credit. That hurts flexibility a bit, and then you're going to have the big money for the top guys. So Chicago might really try to find a way to make it happen. But if Oduya goes back to Chicago, which will be tough in any event, he's going to have to take less than he would get in the open market.
It's amazing, you know, playing with that elbow tear in the Stanley Cup Finals. I think Johnny Oduya is very underrated. I think this year that defense has been extremely underrated. I know some people are going to say, what are you talking about? Chicago's defense has been considered elite, but he is kind of forgotten after Keith, after Seabrook, after Jarmolson, if I can pronounce his name properly. There's Johnny Oduya. And as we know, they were essentially playing four defensemen for most of the playoffs.
And they were so good at it that we sort of forgot that they were playing only with four defensemen.
And it's not just anybody can fit into that role. I mean, Johnny Oduya is an excellent skater. You know, he can add offensively. You know, as Richie mentioned, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks would love to keep him because of the fact that Kimmo Timonen has retired, and they really like Trevor Van Riemsdyk. I think it was pretty evident how much they like Trevor Van Riemsdyk, the fact that he just came in towards the end of the Stanley Cup Finals having not played at all, because Kyle Kuminski and Kimmo Timonen and Runblad weren't really giving Quenneville a lot of confidence. But I think Oduya, you know, as Rich says, like, he could get a quite a nice salary. You know, it might only be 2 or 3 years or something like that. But he's also coming in very highly considered because of the Stanley Cup run. So he's one of those guys. He might not be as highly coveted as a Mike Green, say, but you know, he won't be a UFA long if he becomes a UFA.
He's not going to give you any offense. I mean, he's going to get you. You got 10 points for the Blackhawks this year. He had 16 last year. It's not his game, obviously.
He doesn't have a great shot, and he's at this point in his career, he's obviously not going to get 45, 50 points or something like that.
No.
He's a great skater, though. He can create offensively off the rush.
He can start the rush.
That's
the important part. He can start the rush.
Yeah. If he hits free agency, does he get 3 years, $12 million?
Oh yeah, I think that's a fair bet, Drew. I mean, when you look at the teams out there that need a left side guy, you can move the puck. I mean, he's close to his mid-30s here.
Yeah.
I think you're looking at probably a 3 to 4 year deal at 4 to 4.5 per. You're probably right, accurate on that.
He'll be 34 at the start of next season. Bring him back to the Jets. They need a left side guy.
Yeah, no, they got to spend their money elsewhere. But
yeah. I know.
That trade worked out pretty well with the draft picks, though. We'd have to go over who.
You have to understand something.
Didn't one of those picks turn into Andrew Kopp? Maybe we'll look that up.
Johnny Oduya's success in Chicago, you can't question his success. I mean,
he's a great defenseman.
But Johnny Oduya's success or lack thereof in Winnipeg, it's very much a product of the style and the skill on the roster.
Sure.
He can move the puck up to the Jets forwards, but the Jets forwards can't do anything with it. And he's back in his own zone defending all the time. Johnny Oduya doesn't look that.
This was 3 years ago, not now.
But Johnny Oduya doesn't look as good. If you throw Johnny Oduya on the Arizona Coyotes, you think he's whatever, run-of-the-mill regular defenseman. But you throw him on a team that needs a transition game with speed, and you get to the forwards, you let them do their stuff, and you come back, quick decisions, boom. That's what you need. So a defenseman doesn't always – he's not like a Duncan Keith who will just dominate everywhere. I mean, it certainly helps him to play with Kane and Taves. But – a guy like that needs to fit the proper environment. It's like a stay-at-home defenseman fits in certain teams better than others. Same with Oduya. He wouldn't have done in Winnipeg what he did in Chicago because the skill set was just not even close to the same. And in terms of the roster and players he was playing with.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a big factor. So don't think – it's kind of like similar in sense of Evander Kane may do something different in Buffalo that he wouldn't have necessarily done here because of who he's playing with and the environment and all that. You can't look back and say, hey, you know –
but
Jets,
what he could have, there's no
guarantee. I thought that was a fair trade. I thought the Jets got good value for him at the time, and I thought Chicago did a nice job, and they re-upped him after. Remember, he was a pending UFA. So
that's right. That's why
there was
the Jets
contract
traded him.
Too. Yeah.
Anyways, we'll head to break. When we come back, one final segment. We'll talk about some items in rapid fire. We'll do a cheers and jeers. We'll have some fun for the last 13 minutes or so. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. As he always does, Bruce Springsteen brings us back from break. Final segment of this Saturday's IC show. Rich and I, of course, are off next week as we'll turn it over to Ezzy, to Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and Hustler and Lawless. They'll all be down in Sunrise, Florida for the NHL draft.
Excited to see the Sunrise group.
There you go. It's the usual bringing together of IC and H&L down in Florida for the NHL draft.
Rapid fire.
Richard, do you want to take
before
this
we
one?
Get to rapid fire?
Okay,
we want to throw out in the last segment, have a little fun here. We want to throw out to our listeners who can respond on Twitter
at Illegal Curve.
At Illegal Curve. I received a text from Mr. Ezra Ginsberg this week, Monday morning, I believe, and he texted me, Richie, I just found a blank, I'm going to let our listeners guess, under my pillow. What do you think Ezzy left under his pillow for, I did some work behind the scenes, apparently Friday night is when this object was placed under the pillow, and it was only found by Ezzy on Monday morning. So, three sleeps it took Ezzy to find this item. What was it that Ezzy left that fell under Ezzy's pillow and wasn't discovered for 3 days?
We should qualify this, though, and say that it wasn't actually placed under the pillow. Mm-hmm. It ended up under the pillow.
That's right. It ended up under the pillow.
Yeah.
So far, we got a couple guesses coming in, and you can submit your guesses on at Illegal Curve.
Okay, let's hear it.
Our good friend Aaron Ingram suggested gum, which is a reasonable guess.
It's incorrect.
Incorrect.
Yes.
By the way, is there a prize here?
Yeah, the prize will be tickets.
Our friends at Rumors Comedy Club have graciously offered a couple tickets up to the individual who guesses correctly what was found.
Why don't we do some scrap rapid fire, take some calls on this?
No, we're good with just doing it via Twitter. We have a guess of a knish from Bernstein's Deli.
That's interesting.
A good guess.
Unfortunately, it's incorrect.
Not correct. Somebody's guessed a pepperoni stick.
Getting closer.
So what did Ezzy find under his pillow 3 days after first putting it
there? I can't believe you're bringing this up right now.
Really? You can't believe
when
it?
When you texted me that you found this under your pillow, and I had to back channel and find out that it has been there for 3 days.
I was just trying to make you laugh.
You made me laugh. I lost it.
I didn't think you were going to bring it up on the radio show.
There's no way in the world Richard wasn't going to bring it up on the radio show.
That's true. My life is public.
A beer cap has been suggested, which is another reasonable, logical guess, incorrect.
You would think, yes. You would think.
You would think that might have been it, but it's not a beer cap.
I will give a hint to the audience.
Well, you already kind of said, when someone said pepperoni stick, you said that was close.
It is edible. And it wasn't an entire piece of food, it was a portion of food.
We have jerky as a guest and a hamburger, both of which are incorrect.
Like a full hamburger.
It'd be perfectly reasonable that you would find a full hamburger underneath your pillow 3 days later. Wow, we've never been this popular before.
Give us more of the guesses, Drew.
Oh, we have a winner.
We have a winner.
Who is it?
Marcus Weeb is the winner. He has correctly guessed a half-eaten piece of pizza.
Okay, well, that's not entirely true, though.
Okay, as he...
It was a pizza crust.
Well, that's a half-eaten piece of pizza.
Well, no, because half-eaten...
like three-quarters eaten.
There'd be some pizza left on it.
So as you tell the whole story to our listeners, Marcus will get tickets, of course.
Okay, so, I mean, last Friday night, it was a bit of a late night, and I got home, and, I live with my... with Hart, who we all know. I own a house with my friend Hart, and there was nothing really to eat. It was a little bit late. I didn't really...
I have to interrupt you. The person who guessed apple core has not listened to the show nearly enough, because that's way too healthy.
I do eat apples, though.
From 7-Eleven that have worms in them.
So I got home, and all that was in the fridge was some leftover pizza. It wasn't my leftover pizza.
Oh, really? Interesting.
It was Hart's leftover pizza.
Ooh.
And I started eating it, and what must have happened is I must have fallen asleep while I was just finishing it or something. And so, Richie mentioned it was Monday. I woke up and I was like, what is this hard thing? I thought it was like,
that's Monday. You slept on it Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
No, but it was because I have a queen-size bed, so it somehow managed to go on the other pillow. It wasn't the pillow that I was sleeping on. It was the other pillow. Like, somehow I managed to get my, extended arm when I was sleeping under it, and I just kind of, reached under the pillow and felt this thing, and I was like, what is this? And it was a pizza crust, and I was remembering, I had pizza a couple nights ago.
So the most amazing part is that you were eating a pizza while lying down in bed. How did you do that without choking?
I don't know. I mean, again, it was a late night, and I'm not sure if I was... I don't know how that happened. I don't know. It was like a magical pizza crust. I don't know. I must have blacked out.
I think that goes without saying. That's
good music, by the way.
Finish the show with cheers and juice.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Are you going to be cheering the pizza crust?
I should. I don't have a cheer.
How does Hart feel about you stealing his pizza?
It's a good question.
Wasn't happy about it.
I don't blame him. That's a violation of the roommate agreement.
I still don't know where that pizza was from either. It was good. And I didn't even warm it up. I like, you know, like cold pizza. I like to just eat that pizza cold. You know, I'm struggling for a cheer this week, Drew. I didn't have one, you know, prepared. So
because it's only again been 7 years where we've done cheers and jeers.
Yeah, but I usually have one. You know, I'll cheer us participating in the Manitoba Marathon, I'll cheer everyone who's participating in the Manitoba Marathon. I'm looking forward to it. I'm running in the relay with my sister. So it's going to be lots of fun.
Yes, most of the marathon training diets recommend pizza in bed.
Actually, I heard you guys aren't passing the baton. You're passing pizza crust.
That's good. Then he'll eat the crust and he won't be able to pass it on to the next leg of runner.
I'm going to take an interesting angle. I think I'm going to cheer the Minnesota Wild.
Do tell.
For buying out Matt Cook. Because the league's better off if that guy's not in the league.
Fair point. Sort of an angry cheer, but I like
it. He's been running people for years, dirty player, and personally, I just don't think he has a place in the league, and if it ends up being that he's out of it, good thing.
I'm going to use my host prerogative to not cheer somebody who plays hockey, but cheer somebody who's had a tremendous career while on skates.
Yep.
That is speed skater Cindy Klaassen. She announced her retirement from competitive speed skating earlier today. Of course, a 6-time Olympic medal winner, and of course, also just tremendous, tremendous athlete from here in Winnipeg. So a big cheer to Cindy Klaassen on a fantastic career on the international stage. That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guest, Frank Saravelli, senior hockey reporter for TSN. Big thank you to Guy Flaming from the Pipeline Show in Edmonton. And a big thank you to Kerry Eads, head coach and GM of the Fargo Force. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zapnik Group Realty, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. You follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thanks to Corey behind the glass doing
job,
a fantastic job today. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We'll see you next Friday night, and next Saturday in Sunrise, Florida for the NHL Draft. Until then, if it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Stay tuned for Toronto Blue Jays baseball.